Hello and welcome to Super Respectable. My name is David Lewis and drinking some nice tea is Tosho Rahman. How are you, Tosh?
I'm good. It's actually coffee, but whatever. Bygone.
Coffee.
Bye. Yeah, it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
What time is it over there?
It's 2:32 a.m. So a little coffee boost just to kind of get me going for the next hour and a half. And then back to normal hours starting next week.
How does drinking coffee fit in with your sleep schedule at this hour?
I'm immune to it. It doesn't matter.
I
like coffee, so I could drink it all the time. Do you find that coffee keeps you up? Like the caffeine really does affect your sleep?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I have about 3 coffees a day.
Nice.
2 in the morning and then 1 in the afternoon. And for example, yesterday I messed it up. I had a coffee at like 4 o'clock. And that was a problem.
Really?
I was buzzing late at night. Yeah.
Dave, for our listener in India, how do you like your coffee? What's your favorite way to have coffee? Or are you a mix it up? It doesn't matter. But is there a preference?
Here we have a nice George Clooney Nespresso machine.
Oh.
So I've been polluting landfills with all those capsules.
Are they expensive? But, yeah. Like the capsules?
Relatively speaking, but if you know, comparing to like a Starbucks or whatever it is people do,
yeah,
so much cheaper.
Yeah.
I think it's like 30 cents a capsule, like 20 to 40 cents a capsule versus like $5 for a frappuccino.
yeah, totally. There's I'm an Americano guy. I just like black coffee. But I will have to say though, coffee is one of those things that I will spend more money on if it's good. I'm pretty like cheap in every other area, but good coffee is totally worth it. But
I'm a coffee snob. I think since, you know, well, living in Europe for such a long time, there's such a fantastic array of cool independent coffee places and
roasters.
Yeah, I've really taken a liking to these things, and I probably spent more money than I would like to admit on such things.
I think you should not feel guilty about that whatsoever. For me, food is something I never feel guilty of, whether we eat out, whether we order, or whether we buy stuff, because you got to eat, right? I mean, and might as well enjoy that. I mean, clearly, clothes are not a priority for me and you, as I can tell.
Excuse me. This is one of my nicer sweaters.
I'm joking. But you know what I mean? Material stuff, I think you and I really don't give a crap about. It's more about experiences, right?
Experiences, indeed. And coffee is everyone's drug of choice. You know, can't really go wrong with that one. The light buzz you get from it.
Love it, love it. And it's a beautiful day in the Netherlands today, Wednesday, the 12th. You have plans. You told me you're going to go to the bar right after this, which is kind of early for alcohol, I think. No?
Well, let's wait till the clock
strikes
12 somewhere.
Oh, okay.
And then it's fine.
Because
we have to make use of the time. It's only 12 till 6 that they're open. So we have to maximize the consumption and boost the local economy after such a hard time for the
industry. That's a good marketing right there.
yeah. But no, it is very nice to have some sunshine and some warm weather because it's been pretty cold and miserable for months on end.
Yeah.
So some sunshine is very good. And I can see it's very sunny where you are in the West Coast too. Right?
Yeah, it's sunny. It's always like this and where I am. So it's good. Yeah. I was actually just looking. I was thinking, you know, you should grow your beard back again. That looked really good last year when you had it going earlier this year for a while.
Really?
Yeah, I think you should do it. Why not? But I mean, like cut the hair and keep the beard like that.
Yeah, I can't have both. That's just out of control. But I think, okay, well, if you endorse it, then I'll do it.
I endorse it.
I'm just, it's kind of depressing that I can't like get a nice full beard on though. I really let it go and it was just kind of messy and
You look
something
good.
You'd see for a 16, 17 year old versus a
no. Were you able to grow a full beard when you were 16 years old?
No, but like it didn't feel like, you know, the stubble you get from the 5 o'clock shadow, whatever it's called. I don't get that. It's like, it's just not a nice beard. I don't feel like it's the kind of thing you want to show people.
That's true. I get what you're saying. I think during COVID, one of the funny things I found was that I spoke with friends who I'd known my entire life, but had always had different facial hair. But during COVID, a lot of guys let their facial hair grow. So I saw some of my friends with facial hair, with mustaches, with beards, with goatees I'd never seen in my life. And it was like a weird thing, you know? For me, like, I grow my beard, I shave it, I go through different phases. So I think most of my friends have seen me at different things. But I saw guys with, like, I didn't even know they could grow facial hair, you know? Like, and so a lot of these guys had been like, you know? So, like, I think it was a good experimental point.
But how come you didn't let your luscious locks flow down to the... You could have had a good Big Lebowski look going. You have that nice...
Like Jeff Bridges, just walking around.
Yeah, yeah.
I've tried the long hair. I think, Dave, if anything, you need to be the friend that tells me, hey, Tosh, it's time for a haircut. Because I always convince myself I can do it, but then it gets to a point where it's like, it's too hard.
I'm not short on friends like that, so...
I think I gotta figure out how about are you still exercising though now the weather's better? Are you still going for a little
I do my routine. I got this, actually. I don't think I'll be going back to the gym. The gym's open up again in a couple of weeks, but I've canceled my membership.
Ooh.
I go to the park for runs. We have a chin-up bar here, which is quite dangerous, which will collapse any day now. And I do some home workouts, so it's fine. It's all good.
Awesome. You're staying good. You're staying active. So
yeah,
hopefully, important. I feel like we're sort of as humanity coming more to the finish line of this thing. Hopefully, in the next couple months, maybe by the end of the year, this can be in a rearview mirror. But it looks optimistic on this end. I don't know how it is there, but I feel more optimistic.
I do, but it's still challenging for our dear listeners in India and the subcontinent. So thoughts and prayers for our listeners over there, and hope your families and friends are all safe and healthy, and everything is all right. I know it's a very challenging time there.
Of course.
So Super Respectable is thinking of you. But yeah, it is quite jarring for me to see some of my friends in Canada get their jabs and take their obligatory photos with their arms. I got to work out my biceps to be ready for that photograph, you know, the vaccination pick.
Yeah. Have your folks or have your family gotten at least jab number one, if not jab number two?
Yes, my parents have had jab number one, and I think it's coming up very soon for the rest of the family. But in the UK, it's all gone quite well.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most of my family has had first and second rounds of vaccinations there. So
amazing.
Well done, Brexit and Bojo.
What's is that what they call? Because <I don't. laughs> I'm like, that sounds kind of cool. What's the game plan that, like, once everyone has or most people have vaccine one and two, is it sort of like going back to normal, or is there like what's the game plan?
Free for all. It's the roaring 20s, and it'll be fun times. I think some people started saying, oh no, we need to keep restrictions, but good luck trying to keep everyone that once everyone's had the double dosage. I don't think that's realistic.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I think we will probably just still maintain distance from people, because that's not really a difficult thing for us anyways. Like, parks are big and
I don't like people, so you don't want to get too close to them anyways.
One and two. And I don't mind wearing the mask too. I mean, if they tell us to just for another 6 months to get it, because I guess at the end of the day, the vaccine doesn't mean that you won't get it, right? The vaccine just means you might not be affected by it as significantly, or it's not 100% guarantee, right? It's just they're trying to keep people out of the ICUs, and this is a good step forward towards it. So, I mean, for us, I can go another 6 months a year if you need me to like this, but it's just good to know that you have the vaccine in your system at this point. But I'm not going to go out and just like run around a mall and like high five everyone, but I might do that.
It's a good idea.
But I think the biggest thing for me is going back to restaurants. Like, I'll be admitted, like, going and getting a meal, because we're getting a coffee or something like that, sitting in somewhere, because like takeaway is fun, but like your living room is pretty boring after a while, you know what I mean? Like, you like that atmosphere, that difference.
Absolutely.
Some cinemas would be nice.
I think I told you a few episodes ago that we had gone to cinema
the Italian movie.
Gosh, when was that? Probably September. And there was like us and one other couple. Yeah. And it was cool, but also kind of weird and depressing.
Yeah, I get that.
I'm like, this place is going to go bankrupt if they're not supported by the government. So not great.
I was just thinking the other day about, like, I know we've talked about this, but some of these businesses, oh my gosh, you know, like they've just been holding on for dear life for almost like 18 months now, you know, or coming up on.
Yeah, what's it like if you walk around downtown Vancouver or some shopping areas, like have you noticed more shops saying like for lease and boarded up? Because there's quite a few more in the center here.
Definitely. I mean, I don't go downtown Vancouver that often because I live outside, but in my neighborhoods, whenever I drive through, I've definitely noticed a lot of well-known establishments that have been around pretty much my entire life closing, you know, that because they were renting properties and they've been closed. I've seen a lot of like little restaurants and cafes shut down, a lot of for lease signs. So it's a difficult time for a lot of people. I get it. But, you know, a lot of these businesses, I never thought that this was going to happen. But, you know, Canada's done a really poor job with like restrictions on, restrictions off, or being clear. So I think a lot of these restaurants opened when there was allowed, but then they had to close a couple of weeks later. So I feel for them. So, I mean, we're trying to support local businesses, but unfortunately a lot of businesses have shut down and I don't know if they'll come back or not, but I'm hoping that we can kind of get things up and running again. And I'm like, I'll be the first one that goes out and goes boom, 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 like buy sushi from here and there. But yeah. And in the Netherlands, similar story.
Yeah, similar story.
So positive about that. No, I'm joking.
I'm very eager to get vaccinated, and in theory, it's supposed to happen next month. But it's pretty slow. Pretty slow. What can you say? So let's distract everybody with a nice, a super respectable story.
All right, let's do it. It's your week. Take the floor.
Well, it's not so much a story as it is an instruction manual. Okay. I think.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, because I think we touched on it a couple episodes ago. We were talking about cults and some micronations with Esperanto. There was a few countries that used Esperanto as its language. And so it got me thinking about how should you start a country? How do you go about starting a country?
Okay.
And so I thought I would, you know, walk our listeners through the steps you need to do in order to create a country. Sure. And I think that we're very well qualified to lead a discussion on this matter because, I mean, we don't have a track record of establishing countries, but we are scientists of the political variety.
Yeah.
That was eye rolling for the for the listeners.
We've visited a number of countries, so at least that's
we've been to some countries, so and we live in countries, so we know what countries do.
Yeah, that's
more
true.
Or less
we know how to spell the word countries,
and we can spell countries, although sometimes the plural is challenging where to put the comma.
It is true. Yeah,
the apostrophe. Apostrophe. There we go. So first of all, we need to understand some of the basic definitions and rules. And there's actually a treaty or a convention on what defines a country.
Yeah.
And it's named after the capital of Uruguay, which is, that's a hard one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Montevideo. I always struggle with pronunciation. It's Montevideo or Montevideo. It's the Convention on Rights and Duties of States.
Okay.
Do you know this one?
No.
You study international law?
Probably.
Probably. Okay. Yeah. If you did, just don't tell anybody because, yeah.
That was like 17 years ago, Dave. I totally forgot. But
didn't you do a law degree at LLM and something? Human rights.
In human rights. I probably studied that 12 years ago too. But
oh, man.
I know.
Time flies, right?
I know. If you didn't mention my alma mater, then I would have been 100% okay. But now you mentioned.
Okay.
Now if they come for me, there's evidence. Anyways,
I'm sorry. You can edit this out. So they define what a country is. Mm-hmm. And would you like to have a few guesses or should you just let me have a go?
I'm taking notes. Just go for it. I like a professor. I'm just a student in the audience.
Okay. So there's a few things. You need to have a permanent population.
Okay.
which is kind of a strange definition, but I assume they mean like that your people don't like all of a sudden just move off to some other country and then you no longer have a population to govern.
Is there a number that's generally accepted as a permanent population?
I think you need more than one.
Oh, okay, cool. That's good.
There's, I don't know where it starts becoming a reasonable amount, but I think probably more than a family-sized amount would make sense. Because then you probably have a cult then.
That's not good.
That's just a cult. Then in terms of territory, it has to be defined.
Okay.
Which I guess, I mean, you have borders which are recognized by other states.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I mean, what's a defined territory? Who defines it? You define it. But if you define your territory as around my neighborhood, the city of The Hague and the Dutch government wouldn't like that very much.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about like if it has to be internationally recognized, or what if it's recognized just by yourself or by your citizenship? Is it still considered a nation?
Okay. We're getting to that. Okay. So the next one is you have to have a government.
Cool.
And you could be the government. So, I mean, that's possible. Yeah. But it's quite taxing and time consuming to govern a nation on your own. So you probably need some help with that.
Yeah.
And your permanent population could help you.
Yeah.
And then quite importantly, you have to have the capacity to enter into relations with other states. It's kind of a strange,
strange
explanation there. But that's more to do with, I think, around recognition,
because I think it's so funny you were saying this. I was just watching Black Panther earlier this evening. No relation, like directly, but I don't. Have you seen the movie?
I have not.
Oh my god, Dave's never seen any. He doesn't like any of the superhero movies. But there is a there is a state called Wakanda, which is where the Black Panther comes from, and it's a made up African state. But they don't engage in any international relations with the outside world. But still, I mean, they're recognized as a country, but I was just relating it back to that, but interesting. So like other countries have to have to at least know that you exist, and yeah, that's cool. You're a country, but
it's a different one. I mean, it should be about having the capacity to have diplomatic relations.
Yeah. Okay. So you could do it if you wanted to,
you could do it, but then
you don't have.
It doesn't necessarily mean that they have to recognize you. It's just about having the capacity to do so,
I guess.
But in all intents and purposes, you need to be recognized, I think.
Okay.
And generally speaking, you need to be taken seriously by at least, you know, 5, 10, 20 countries. I don't know what amount it is that you need, because some countries like Taiwan, it's a real challenge. Taiwan is not a UN
country,
right?
Yeah.
Because China says no.
Yeah, China says no.
And they're facing all sorts of troubles because China is now going around the world to countries that do recognize Taiwan and saying you should stop recognizing Taiwan because that's very bad for you, and we'll give you some money and some invest in your country if you do recognize China. So that's a challenge.
Yeah, but countries like that, I mean, have troubled histories or difficult or very complicated in that they have some type of link to another country or another state. But I'm talking about if you and I found an island in the middle of the Pacific and we're like, this is going to be our country. Like, do we nearly need to have it recognized by other people? Because like, what if we have no relations with all those other countries? I mean, people are welcome to come and visit, but we don't need them.
Well, no man is an island, as they say in France.
How timely. John Donne, right? Yeah.
So therefore, that probably would work for a little while and then it would stop working. But we'll get to that because now that we know the definition according to this convention, we can start working with it and seeing how that works for our own attempts to create a country.
Quick question on the convention.
Sure.
Has it been ratified by other countries? Some countries agree to it, or is it just one of those things that just...
I'm not sure maybe Uruguay's just done it and no one else recognizes it.
the Montevideo Convention.
Yeah, some club. I think it has been adopted and recognized as an international law. But international law is just that. It's, you know, a lot of conventions, because international law is kind of a flaky thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, it has to
That I studied and I sort of remember that, like the convention stuff. But yeah, it is, that's a flaky is a very good word, because really who's there to enforce it on top of
the United Nations? Ooh.
I guess that's who we've chosen to isolate in this episode. The UN.
There goes my future career.
It's okay. You're fine.
It's fine. Okay. So where do we start now? I think the best thing to do would be possibly just start off and declare yourself a country. Just say, hey, I'm starting a country, and you give it a name whenever you feel like it. And then maybe go through the next steps. Or you could go through the steps and then declare yourself a country. It's up to you. It could be like you just build it and they'll come, or you just announce it and people will flock to you and help you fulfill all the different criteria. I don't know.
You know what I think would be fun, if it works with you, is that as we go through the steps and you talk, can we build our own country, you and I, and we can add these little,
little things? We'll brainstorm.
Oh my God, so, I'm excited. Okay.
So step one, I guess, is we need to have some land from which to govern, right?
Yeah.
So this is hard because a lot of the land is claimed and it's taken, right?
Totally. That seems to be the major reason for most problems around the world.
A lot of problems.
Yeah.
So what can we do? We could either conquer some vulnerable state and claim a little patch of land within a state.
Yeah.
And have a, is that an exclave? Enclave? Exclave.
Enclave, right? Oh, I don't know, but I know it's a clave.
It's some sort of clave. And you could also go to Antarctica, which is sort of informally, you know, carved out by different countries, but not really governed.
Is that right? I didn't know that. It's no one owns it.
Well, I think there's a convention which says, you know, you can't just start making a city there. Various powers have like
research facilities,
minor research facilities / informal jurisdiction over elements of the territory.
But
it's mostly just scientific expeditions and
I like that.
That sort of thing.
I like that there's certain communal things that are like for all of humanity, because everyone wants to own something. And I just feel like, you know, like I find that the Brits and like the colonial powers are always big on like trying to get land in the middle, like all over the world. And if it was me, I'd rather just be like, just take things that I don't want. I just rather have a little bit just and just it. really, because it's weird. Like, I think you'll talk, like we can get to it, but there's like colonies or there's like Commonwealth countries that are like in the middle of nowhere and have no relationship to like that country, but they still exist and they're still connected somehow. Like the Falkland Islands, I find really strange. Because they're so far away, you know? But anyways, sorry, I digress.
Las Malvinas.
Yes.
Okay, that's the Argentine name for it. So there we go.
Yeah, I saw the Crown episode that was like there, right? They talked about it, didn't they?
They did. Okay. There was quite the thing for Thatcher to start a war to build a reputation. Yeah, so basically land is a challenge. So you touched on it earlier. You should probably go out to sea. Easier in some ways, but also very challenging from an engineering perspective to take out some territory in the ocean. So this has been tried before.
Okay.
I think I mentioned there was Rose Island in the Adriatic.
Yep.
So some loopy Italians went out there in the 70s, I think it was, to establish a territory. You can watch the Netflix movie, which is fantastic. And there was also the Principality of Sealand. Do you know that one?
No. Where's that?
That's in the North Sea. So it was also a movie, a fantastic movie, where a disgruntled radio DJ was upset with the BBC broadcasting rules. I'll probably get corrected by Dr. Lewis on this, which are very restrictive for independent radio. And so he somehow made it to this abandoned military outpost in the North Sea and started broadcasting pirate radio from there. And he started beaming into the UK and having this pirate radio, and that caused all sorts of drama. And he declared it a sovereign nation.
Very cool.
Indeed. So that's the option, I think. It's probably the best option.
Mm-hmm.
Then you need to have some kind of government. So we have to create some rules for the country and write a constitution of some sort. So you could write up a national anthem while you're at it, get a graphic designer on board to draw your flag and your coins. And
I thought you were going to say get a graphic designer for your constitution.
that could work too. Well, if you're doing it on the cheap, get them to do everything.
As scientists of politics, I've read my fair share of constitutions or charters and et cetera.
Of course.
What are some of the main things that you need to have in a constitution, do you think, to make it that said document? I think your rights and freedoms for your people, how you're being governed.
Yeah. Just a mission statement like a company has, you know. Yeah. Have a good time all the time.
That's a good one.
Yeah. That's my mission statement.
Have a good time all the time. Yeah.
It could be like Google's, you know, like do no harm. I think it's the medical professions one.
Yeah. I think that's the oath. Isn't that the Hippocratic oath?
Hippocratic oath. I think Google also says that.
Do no harm. Yeah, that's true.
This Facebook's is move fast and break stuff. I think that was their initial one.
Oh.
So that's a pretty good one for a country as well. And then we'll just throw in like the Ten Commandments from the Bible. Okay. We'll combine like some Buddhist stuff and a lot of the people who set up their own countries are like libertarians, so they don't really like having too many rules like this. So we'll try and keep it simple, I guess.
I feel like if you're going to start a country, you need, I find that like, you know, Rose Island and then like Pirate Radio, all these guys, most of the time, like I think anyone who sets up their own country nowadays are pretty like 50% slacker at least, or 75% slacker. But I think you need one dude who kind of understands constitutions and law and stuff like that, just to help, you know. You need like that guy who can come in and just kind of set it up, charge his retainer and then get out of there. But but you need a little bit of structure. But on a cool side note, I actually saw the Constitution, the US Constitution, when I was in Washington, DC at the museum. And it was pretty cool. Like, especially for someone who's like into politics and history and stuff. I was like, wow, it was, it was very cool to look at. I don't know if you've seen any original texts anywhere around the world, but I find that stuff really cool and fascinating.
I've seen some stuff at the British Library and the British Museum.
Nice.
But it didn't inspire me to go off and make a country. It just said, okay, there it is. I read the caption, move on.
Do you think, can you change the constitution? Can you update it in any countries or constitutions?
Well, I mean, the U.S. has like 7, 8, 9. They got multiple like amendments, don't they?
You like, got amendments.
They'll put like a footnote or appendix, and they have some kind of stuff at the back.
If we're going to use the American system, like my knowledge is somewhat limited, but I know that like to even make the slightest change on anything related to the Constitution, you need to go through like years and years and years of debate, and then like everyone needs to agree just to add that extra comma in or something. It's very, very difficult, I think, in the U.S. system to do anything regarded to the Constitution. But in Canada, my understanding was that it's a little bit easier, but not as easy. I think there have been times where they've added things to the charter, or they've added things to the some of our documents that was like more inclusive for all people. But I don't know the U.S. system. I always hear it's a nightmare for anything.
Yeah, so we won't make it a nightmare for our country. We'll make it very easy to change and modify all the rules whenever people see fit.
Yeah, it'll be a Google Doc that's shared with everyone. So you
Google Doc. That's a brilliant idea. Write that down.
Done. Got it.
All right. And then pick a language. I guess we should pick one that we speak, because that'd be problematic for governance if our people are speaking different languages.
Esperanto it is.
I think Esperanto, since we can pick it up in a few months, and that'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then the next problem we'll have is we need the permanent population. So if it's just the super respectable crew, that's two people, that's probably not good enough.
Yeah.
Because I think we need, and then we'll have a challenge persuading friends and family to join us. They'll have abandoned us at this point. They said, Tosh and Dave, you guys are crazy.
Yeah.
You guys have lost it. You guys have fun with your country, but we're not joining. We have our nice property in Canada and our rules and our whatever.
Yeah.
So the thing is, we'll make a website and
website for our country. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Like a Wix site.
Because we talked about it in the cult episode, and this does have elements of a cult, but it won't be. It'll be a country.
Got it.
And
that should be in our constitution. We are not a cult.
We're not a cult. We're not a cult.
Underlined.
Exactly. It'll be underlined and in bold and in italics.
Yeah.
And so basically, as we said, the internet is a great thing. It brings together like-minded people from all over the world. So we'll get lots of free-spirited people who like shawarmas to come over to our country. And that will be our national dish, by the way, shawarma.
Okay. Yeah. In the Constitution, I got it. I'm writing an article too.
Yeah, you're writing the Constitution as we speak. So I think that'll attract at least 10 people. And yeah, that's a pretty permanent population. Also in the Constitution, once you've arrived in said country, they can't leave because we need to have them. it's going to be permanent, right?
That's sort of like against Article 2 that we're not a cult, or Article 1, we're not a cult, but we can make it work.
It'll be written in very small font. They won't know about it until...
But going back to the permanent population thing, is that couldn't you put it in your constitution or somewhat that, like, if you spend half the time of a year there or a certain number of days or months, it could...
I see you're drawing on some very good knowledge in here. You would do well to work for my country.
Okay.
No, that's actually very good. Write that down, because that's a great thing. You could have an itinerant population of freelancers, remote workers, COVID-friendly location. Yeah. So they could get citizenship and residency as long as they committed to being present for 180 days.
Sounds fair.
On our territory and invested in real estate and Bitcoin into the
economy. Is that our national currency, Bitcoin?
Yes. So next point. Very, very good. So any viable country, it's not written in the Montevideo Convention, but it needs a functioning economy, right? Won't last very long if you can't fund the governance, right? So
that's true. But are we going tourism? That's a sector, right?
It's a sector. You'll get a lot of curious people poking around and wondering what's going on in our country, so they'll come around. That's some good hard currency to come in. We'll open it up to money laundering.
Great. Let me make some amendments in the Constitution for that. Okay.
Yeah, that's another one to write in small font.
Yeah.
And various other shady people. And we will accept all forms of cryptocurrency, from Dogecoin to Bitcoin to
the moon, right? Yeah.
To the moon, whatever.
So here's a question for you, Dave. Do you think that traditional forms or modern day forms of finance are still existent in our country? Do we need to have money? Could we have other forms of economy other than currency or money? Could we have a bartering system? Could we have trading instead of actual coin?
Everything is accepted.
Oh, okay. So it's very like Visa, Amex, MasterCard, bartering, negotiation,
Bitcoin. It's like supercharged capitalism, but also total chaos. Because wouldn't that amount to some form of bartering in the end, if everything is a financial instrument and it's used for as a medium of exchange in a country? That's chaos, right?
Yeah, that's like capitalistic chaos. Like that's, I think what would happen, that's like a casino. And when they first start off and you don't really plan out a casino really well, and like you just accept everything and you start betting, eventually the government will just kind of implode, because I don't think we'll have that much of an income. I think money wouldn't be tracked properly in whatever sense there is. Some guy would be like,
at least we had fun while it lasted, right?
That's true. What was the motto of the country?
Have a good time most of the time until...
Yeah. I think if it eventually got to a point where you just accept anything, some guy would pay for like a computer with like a coffee, and the other guy would pay with money, and then like that means coffee and money would be equivalent, right? $1,000 worth of coffee would be like 10 beans or whatever it is. We got to think out the economy. We got to choose one, I think, Dave, whether it's Dogecoin or bartering or actual currency, anyways,
I think we could get a pretty good economy going with money laundering and tourism.
We need banks for that, right? So that also is important.
But we would establish a bank of our own, and we couldn't use U.S. dollars, because that would get the attention of the government in a very bad way.
True, we make our own currency up.
We would operate
monopoly money
separate from monopoly money. Right. What's next? So that's pretty good. I think we've got most of the things going there, and then the biggest challenge is declaring ourselves a country, and then waiting for the reaction. Like, oh, you know, what's the international response going to be to our? We need a name for the country. We haven't named it. Whatever. Super respectable land.
Yeah. Let's call it.
America. The options.
Super Americano.
Americano.
Super Americano. I like that.
Super Americano. So that is a challenge, because either they'll just ignore us and say, you morons, like, just come home, David and Tosh. You just, you know, there's a shelter and nice stuff waiting for you back in Canada and the Netherlands. Just stop this nonsense.
Yeah.
But if we say no, continue on this fight forevermore. Then you might start getting some attention from other countries. It's probably bad attention. They'll probably send in some army to poke around and make sure that you're not doing anything terribly awful.
Do we have a military in our country? Is that necessary? Should it be a nation state or not really?
It's not necessary, but it's recommended.
It's optional. Yeah.
Because from what I understand, Costa Rica doesn't have a army.
Yeah.
Which I find implausible. They must have something, just an army, but with a different name, like peace forces. And
But most countries have some type of security services, whether internal or external, right? To keep law.
Yeah, you just outsource it to like
Bridgewater.
So I don't know. I think recognition is a challenge. So I think the best thing would be to target other similar struggling micronations or self-determination movements. So we could go after Somaliland. We could go to the Kurds, the
little islands,
Palestinians,
and
say solidarity. We'll recognize you if you recognize us.
Yeah. I was just, when you were saying the recognition part, I was kind of like, you know, those people that are like, I don't really care what other people think. I just care about what I think. We could also be like that, where we just don't care what other people, maybe we don't want to go to the meetings.
But the reality is everyone cares what everyone else thinks. The people who say that, they care.
True that.
So we have to just get some attention where we can get it, right? Any love is good love. And we'll go for the love of similar downtrodden people.
Yeah.
And hopefully that builds some sort of good recognition and some sort of quasi-legitimacy.
Yeah.
Which will help trade. We'll establish trade relations with those people.
What are we trading? All that money that we've laundered?
Trading good vibes, man.
Well played, my friend. Well played.
Positive vibes. Maybe the national anthem could be good vibrations. That's like a happy song, right?
It's a very happy song. And it goes into our motto, right?
So who would invade a country like that? That's just mean. So if we got invaded with over such a positive vibe, then similar nice countries like Canada and Iceland and the Nordic countries would come to our defense, because they don't like seeing nice, good people.
Let them have a good time. They're not hurting anyone. That's pretty much what they'll
say. Absolutely. So, you know, that's what we'll do, right?
Yeah, that's cool. Please. Are there any other points that we need for a country?
No, I think we've covered it. I'm just going to name a couple examples of recent micronations just to inspire us and our listeners.
Are micronations just because of their geography that they're small, or is it just because they're new, they're not being recognized yet?
All of the above.
All of the above.
It's just a big problem.
Because there's no land left, right, to create a big country. You just have little islands pretty much now, or if you just seized a country, like you said, but that doesn't ever happen anymore. I mean, to create
a new country. It's kind of like what we talked about with Esperanto. How does a word become a word? They say, the etymology, it's, you know, linked to Latin, but then Latin, they just made grunting noises, or cavemen made grunting noises, and that was the word, and then it evolved from there, right? So same thing with a country. Like, how did Spain become Spain, or, you know,
I just
Bangladesh.
I feel like Dr. Lewis is going to highlight the fact that Latin wasn't just granting noises. I feel like that was a little later in the, yeah, in the timeline. Well,
but, he's already stopped listening because he's heard his son say something so moronic, but here we go.
Anyways.
So if you're still with us, Dr. Lewis, here we go. Here's some two micronations for you.
I mean, I'm excited to see if I recognize any of these.
So one is the Republic of Minerva.
Yes, I have heard of it. And
you've heard of it?
Yeah.
Awesome. That's so all. This is these are the two ones I'm going to cite are, again, libertarians who've kind of lost the plot a little bit. So this is one that was done in the 70s. It was reclaimed land of artificial island in the South Pacific. So the guy who did it was an American real estate millionaire. He had loads of money.
Tons of money.
His name was Michael Oliver, and he wanted to create a society with no tax, welfare, any kind of economic intervention whatsoever.
Yeah.
And he had tons of money to do this, so he spent millions of dollars, I think, reclaiming the land and then saying, here we are. But this really ruffled some feathers of the neighboring states of like Tonga and Vanuatu and all these places. So
they
knocked on the door of like New Zealand and Australia, their big brother friends, and said, hey, like, what's the deal here? You got to help us out. And so within the same year, I think Tonga like sent in a few soldiers to say, like, stop this nonsense. This is our land now. So Tonga now has the Republic of Minerva.
Yeah.
So this guy actually served to increase the land mass of Tonga because he built, spent millions of dollars building artificial land, and Tonga just took it.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
So that's a risk. That's a risk if we create a country just adding to land mass of another country.
Yeah.
And then the final one is the Free Republic of Liberland.
I've never heard of that
this
one.
This is quite a unique one. I think it's quite cool. It's in a landmass. It's not like a speck of island somewhere in the Pacific. It's an uninhabited parcel of disputed land between Croatia and Serbia.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah. So, of course, there's been these disputes in the Balkans for some time. And lost in this struggle is Liberland. It's been undecided. They couldn't figure out what to do with it. And this guy just came in and said, it's a country now. It's mine.
Yeah.
It was proclaimed, it's probably the most recent micronation, I think, 2015.
So just a couple years ago,
A few years ago, Czech libertarian Vis Jedlička. It's 7 square kilometers. It's about the size of Gibraltar.
Okay. Oh, it's sizable still. Like, I mean, it's
sizable. Indeed. Yeah. And he has managed to establish relations with Somaliland.
No way, huh?
Yeah, they recognized him. So that's quite encouraging for him. The problem is there's no infrastructure whatsoever and it lies on a floodplain. So it's very prone to not being a country from time to time.
Yeah, interesting. That one sounds, I'm going to read about that one because I was just thinking that like, I'm trying to think about land like that's been undisputed or maybe not claimed around the world. And I think it's shrinking size. Like there's not a lot of land that hasn't been claimed by someone yet. I think it's probably those little islands that are in the middle of nowhere, right?
Another option is I read about you have to focus on these like disputed territories where it hasn't been adjudicated upon. So go to like Egypt and Sudan. I think they've got a border dispute. You can go in there.
Really?
It's pretty inhospitable territory though. So
it'd be hard to bring other people, convince them to come.
Yeah, but good shawarma is there, I think.
That's very important. I was just thinking while you're talking about it, I mean, like making a country obviously is very difficult to do, but a lot of people kind of buy islands and just live in their own ways, or they kind of like live in their houses or have little like cabins. And so with lots of land, it's not your own country, but it's your own system. Like it's your own property where you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. Like Richard Branson has his place. Yeah, which
Nectar Island.
I think it's Necker Island. I'm not sure.
Oh, Necker. Okay. In the British Virgin Islands, right?
But it burned down. The whole thing nearly collapsed a few years ago. But he could pretty much call that a country, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, like, you're still technically under the British Virgin Islands, but, like, I guess you could do whatever you wanted on your country as long as it didn't violate BVI law or whatever it was. But yeah. You kind of like, I think there are stories of other people who have bought towns and then just did whatever they wanted in the town. A lot of celebrities have little places here and there. If I, in all seriousness, created a, I think it would be a really fascinating case study to create your own little entity and just to build it, even theoretically, because like, you could really see some of the problems we have around the world and see ways you could fix it from the get-go, right? Like, I think more in terms of implementation of policy as opposed to the actual theory of policies of a constitution, because I find most constitutions are really well written and they cover what you're supposed to, but they're just not implemented well. I don't know if you
disagree. let's solve this. It's kind of like starting a company. It's like you see other companies being run, you think I can do that better.
Yeah.
So and well, then you learn from doing it better, how to improve, and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wouldn't hurt to try, right? So if any super respectable listeners out there like what they're hearing, then write us a message, get in touch on all the social media platforms, and we'll talk it over. We'll think about how to start some sort of country.
Yeah, I mean, I like the things you said earlier throughout the program about have fun all the, what was the title?
Have a good time all the time.
Yeah. And then shawarmas and national anthems. Is this the good vibration?
I think
which we need to get the license from Mark Wahlberg for that, and then we could just have fun all the time. But would have to work on the economy. I felt like that's something, the bartering system or the economy system, we need to kind of flush out a little bit. And
money laundering is a victimless crime, so that's fine.
Yeah, that's cool. Infrastructure. One. I know it's not related to country building, but urban planning is always something I've been fascinated on. So, I mean, we definitely need to really pay attention to how we build. Because have you ever been in a city and you're like, the city has poorly built or like these roads are horrible or whatever? So like in our little neck of the woods of super Americana, we got to make sure that like people can get from place to place really conveniently. No
cars, no roads, because that makes it easy to invade.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So all by foot.
We'd have bike lanes at most. And sure. That's hard for to send the tanks in on that.
Have you ever been to an island where there's no cars? I've been to like a couple, and it's
I've been to Istanbul. There's one which is quite cool. Prince's Island.
Yeah, I went to that one, and then it was one of the islands. It was Adalar, I think, it's a big island. I went to another place where it was just horses. In Bali. Not in Bali, in Indonesia. And there's a peacefulness about it, not seeing cars and transportation and being. But like, if you have really big islands, it's really hard. Like, you're like, I'm going to walk to the other side of the island. I'll see you in 5 days, you know? So like,
yeah,
it can be troubling.
Yeah, exactly.
Troubling.
Well, we'll have to research this a bit more, but I think we have a good framework, the foundation to start from for the country. So we'll have to do some scanning on Google Maps, scout out some good locations. And good real estate.
One of the most important things is that we'd have to relocate there to broadcast our podcast from. That'll be our HQ for the podcast, right?
Yes, that is to be discussed with our significant others, all in due course.
You do the first 180 days, and then I'll do the second 180 days.
There we go.
So we both maintain our residency and our permanent citizenship.
But I think it's important that the rulers of super respectable land are present on the territory at some point.
Yeah.
So, yes.
And I think we get equality for all, but I mean, we'll get a couple extra little
we'll get a bit more equality.
Quality. And that's the reason most countries fail is because power gets to the head.
You read Animal Farm, right? That book tells you all you need to know about running a country. And
that'll be that'll be our national book. That'll be the book.
It'll be our book.
All citizens. Well, Dave, exactly. I'm fascinated. I think it was a very interesting topic. I thought about it multiple times about what it's like to start your own country. But one day in 300, 400 years, we'll have our Declaration of Independence or our Constitution, and people frame it and keep it in the museum in the island.
And it's important to remember, it's not a cult. Our charismatic leadership will be benevolent and peaceful.
Article one. We are not.
Article one.
There you go. Anyways, Dave, thank you so much. Very fascinating. We'll post some stuff up on as links and stuff to some of that.
Some instructions.
Some of the instructions / some of the two countries that are actually micronations. And comment. Let us know what you think. And then be safe, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Be safe and have a good time.
And have a good time all the time.
All the time.
Ciao.
Arrivederci.